everybody. Brian here. It's Sunday, June 14th, 2020, and I'm just sitting here trying to edit this week's podcast, and for various reasons, it's just not happening. Primarily, while we recorded Thursday, I had failed to press the record button, so we spoke for a good hour and a half, really good content, but I didn't record it. Yeah, my bad. So we went ahead and started recording and finished the show out with the intentions of getting together Saturday, and trying to re-record what we missed. And we did that, but it just didn't work out. The audio quality was really bad on both our ends. I sounded like I was eating the microphone. Joe was, more often than not, sounded like he was too far away. And we just rambled. Something that we need to work on. We need to tighten things up, but that's beside the point. So anyway, I'm going to play for you what we recorded Thursday, and just I'm going to cut my losses. It's pretty good. We still I think talked for an hour, so you'll still have plenty to listen to. And again, I want to apologize, and hopefully we'll come back next week better than ever. Take care. Okay, Joe. And so this is the part of the show where we update our listeners on anything that's happened concerning the Ahmaud Arbery case in Georgia. I've not heard anything, but have you? Do you have any news? Anything has transpired since we last spoke?
No, nothing at all, really. I mean,
okay,
yeah.
I think it's probably really been put into the back burner, considering everything else that's been going on, and that would be George Floyd in Minnesota. And we've known about this for like 2 weeks now. We've even talked about it, but I finally see it looks like it's CBS was the first to report that George Floyd and Derek Chauvin knew each other.
I saw that the other day as well. I thought, oh my god, I think it was on CNN where they were talking okay. about how they knew each other. But I'm surprised that when they brought that up, they didn't say, okay, well, does that change, you know, was there some other motive behind why Derek Chauvin did that? It's funny because I make it a point to listen to a bunch of, you know, a wide diversity of thinkers on stuff. And turned out that Mr. Floyd was dating a white woman. And, and there's some conjecture that, yes, they knew each other, and Chauvin knew Mr. Floyd, and there may have been a little bit more behind that whole knee on the back of the neck than just him being that, you know, yeah.
That, wow.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm surprised that, so even though the mainstream media has picked it up, they haven't done the very next logical step to think, okay, well, you know, if these guys did know each other, the world's a small place, you know, was there something else behind this whole knee to the back of the neck? Because I'm assuming that Chauvin didn't go around doing this all 18 years of his career on the force, right?
This right.
This will come out. So, yeah. On a long enough time, given enough time, the mainstream media will eventually catch up with our podcast, Brian.
Eventually.
Eventually, yeah.
Give them time. Yeah. I came across, before we started recording, I came across one other story, and I don't know this. Okay, so that first story, they had a, I think it's some guy named David Penny, P-I-N-N-E-Y, mm-hmm. who was the one who worked at the same club where Chauvin and Floyd worked. And he's the one who said that the two knew each other pretty well, and that they had, that there had been a mix-up and they had bumped heads even, is what he said. But then there was another report that's come out since where he says basically that he mixed up George Floyd with another black guy and that he was wrong. So,
I mean, we do all look alike. So, I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah. to his credit, I guess. But doesn't that just sound a little fishy to me?
Only a little?
Yeah, just a little.
Like a fish market.
Right.
Same one that, these guys totally knew each other. Oh, my bad. I was thinking about the other black guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How? Yeah. Because it's like,
you said George Floyd. I meant George Boyd. My bad.
Yes. yeah. So I'm calling bullshit on that. But anyway, I guess that's where we're at.
I think that grade A. I mean, just uncut. You know how you used to say no Vaseline. Just
yeah.
Like, yeah, we're not going to even pretend like we care about your feelings. We're just going to put this out there.
Well, you know, since we're beating up on the press and the news, I think that's a good segue into our main story of the night.
Where you see beating up, I see truth telling.
There you go. Yeah. It's funny, but what's sad is that it's the same thing, really.
Yeah. There's no daylight between beating up and truth telling. It's just like, hey, guys in the press, you guys are just doing a crappy job. Just stop being so terrible. We really need you guys to do a good job. So this last, I don't want to say the last story, but, this one of our topics.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, in general... Okay, you are approximately, I'm going to say this, you are approximately how many years old?
46.
Approximately 46. And of that 46 years, how many of them would you say that you've had a generally favorable impression of cops?
Of cops. Well, I like it when they get cats out of trees, and
yeah.
And their job is dangerous. So
very dangerous.
You got to, they put on that, they put on that badge every morning, and they don't know if they're going to come home.
Yeah.
So they're. What can I say?
We all know that it's one of the most dangerous jobs, right?
Well, obviously, that's what we hear all the time.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, and we also know that if we hear something a lot, it, probably makes it true. More than likely makes it true.
Well, especially if you hear it on the news.
Oh, yeah. If a guy in a suit with a camera is telling you something you can take to the bank, you can bank on that. Yeah. Being a little facetious, but we are going to be talking about copaganda.
I like it. I'd never heard that term until you sent me this story, but I like it.
And let's see if we can define what copaganda is. Let's see here.
I have it. Copaganda is any news story that uncritically advances a police department's image or helps undermine reform efforts.
Okay. Copaganda. And so... If you once again, I love numbers. If you heard 10 stories that had to do with cops, how many of them would you assume, or would you say, has been your experience? Is that as copaganda?
I would probably say all of them. I mean, aside from what's happening recently, but just typically, like, you know, these things invade. They're really the only news that I watch on TV is like the morning, like the local morning news, mm-hmm. where they do the weather, traffic, and they always have like mindless bullshit stories. Injected.
How to make the perfect omelet.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
but it's those shows that are littered with these propaganda stories.
Yeah. So I mean, I but the answer a question I asked you earlier. I'm almost 40 years old, and yep. I would say that I think of that 40 years, most of it I've had relatively positive views of the police, but it dawned on me that, oh my goodness, like, I think I may have been propagandized since I was a little kid.
Yeah, I kind of, when you asked me that and I was thinking about it, I was like, I'd like to say that I was smart enough to know that I was being, you know, having smoke blown up my ass, but
I wasn't.
I don't think that I was looking at this article and I was like, well, you know, I think I fell for this too.
Like, I remember when I was a kid, and when you were a kid, did you guys have DARE in your schools?
No, that kind of came right after I graduated.
Well, I remember when I was a kid, when I was in kindergarten in California, and up when I was, you know. I think the last time I had propaganda in the schools was when I was in fifth and sixth grade. When I was a kid, they literally would have a cop come to the come to our classroom and, you know, talk to us about like how to interact with police. And it's funny because I never realized how much that stuck with me until I was walking down the street one day. And I was walking with a friend, and I saw a cop, and I waved. And my friend was like, what the hell are you doing? Why are you waving at that cop? And I'm like, you're supposed to wave at cops, right? And hey, he's a cop. But it was one of those things that they told us, you know, when you see a cop, just, you know, say hi. Yeah. And later when I was in St. Louis, actually in I think I was in sixth grade, when they actually had a DARE officer come to our school. I remember his name to this very day, Officer Ed Nestor of the Chesterfield Police Department. And literally he would come in every week and tell us about, you know, why drugs are bad and stuff like that. But yeah, in St. Louis at that time, propaganda was, you know, brought into the classrooms.
Wow.
But yeah, it's one of those things where as you get older, you realize, oh my goodness, like so much of the stuff that I had taken because it was given to me was stuff that I probably should not have trusted.
You know what? This just popped into my head. But as you're talking about this, I don't remember what grade it was. I was in grade school, so it would have been sixth grade or younger. But they took us. We went to the county jail. They took us to the county jail.
Were you a bad kid? Were they scary?
Well, you know, that's what my mind is kind of blown right now, because you remember a couple episodes ago I was talking about fear and how
fear
our actions are we're obedient because of fear that's constantly put on us, and that was one of them, man.
Oh yeah.
It's a twofer. Not only were they doing the propaganda, but also at the same time,
they're scaring kids shitless.
Exactly.
They're traumatizing kids.
Wow. That just hit me.
Yeah. You know, at the age of 46, Brian realizes he was a victim all this time.
All right.
Okay. Let's go down and review this article and talk about some of the you know, what we find as a propaganda. You want to go to the first one?
Yeah. Yeah, these are all really interesting. So number one that we have here is the conveniently timed, and that's what it is. The conveniently timed. It's not the stories, but it's like when they drop the stories. The conveniently timed, how dangerous the job is story. You know, so one of the more subtle ways the media helps muddy the waters on police violence is by publishing tales of how difficult the police have it as PR-intensive trials of police officers are being carried out in the public. While not directly apologizing for police violence, the fog of war framing sows doubt in the public's mind and allows more leeway in highly charged cases of police misconduct.
So, have you heard any of these how dangerous the job is stories in the past, let's say, week or so?
Okay, not yet, but I have avoided. I have not watched any news yet, so I am going to. It's going to make me miserable, but for this podcast, I'm going to force myself to start paying attention to at least an hour of news a day.
Oh wow.
Just for research for this kind of stuff, because this is important. We need to identify this if it's happening. Yeah, and I believe that it will be happening.
That is what I call dedication. If you are
I do what I can.
Nothing's too good for the podcast.
I do what I can for my millions of fans, you know.
It's all for the fans. All of it.
It's all for the fans. Yeah. But I'm curious now to start. Now that I'm conscious of this existence, I'm anxious to start identifying it.
All right, well, I was thinking we should also if we come across any cop stories or just cop stuff in general in the future, we should run it through this and determine if it's propaganda or not.
Exactly.
All right. So the first one was this is a dangerous job. Second one is. The diversity boosting story, and I think we've all seen this. I mean, this is relatively straightforward. The racism inherent in most stories of police brutality trick many into thinking a more diverse police force necessarily makes a less racist one. While the science backing up its assumption is inconclusive. So while a disproportionate white police representation at Ferguson combined with their rank systematic racism strikes most people as intuitively problematic. Yeah, that sounds pretty problematic.
Yeah.
While a more representative police force certainly can't hurt, these stories highlight how inclusive policing are gay.
The grammar on this article is not 100%.
Basically, it's saying that oftentimes when you see stories about the police, or you have the cops killed these black guy, you'll have them trot out a black cop, or, you know,
right.
Black police commander. Helen Ferguson, I think it was Captain Ron Johnson. In fact, they wheeled him out the other day. Oh, look at these black cops. This must be better.
Just because there's black representation on the force doesn't mean that there's no racism going on.
Yeah, you can have
absolutely
the most racist police force in the world and have it staffed by all black cops. That doesn't mean the organization still does what it does.
Right.
You just have black hands doing it.
Yeah, and this is used without doubt every time something like this happens. This is always a go-to.
The black folks, they can't be.
Well, I mean, right now, the police captain in Minnesota, he's black. Yeah. And so, yeah. So yeah, we'll get more stories like this as time goes on as well.
What's our next piece of propaganda?
This one is a this is a favorite of mine. This is going to be good. The bogus threat. A time-honored tradition that dates back to the civil rights era. Police will claim they've received threats from activists to preemptively justify any crackdowns they may want to engage in. It's like they're writing themselves a free crackhead ticket.
Cracking heads free card.
Cracking, yeah, that's good. Yeah, it's just too great though. And they give an example here. Sheriff Clark receives threats after outbreaks. But yeah, it's basically like, hey, I heard y'all is gonna start trouble, so I'm ready to take care of it.
We're gonna preemptively act on this one.
Yeah, that's good. What else do we have here? Anything of that's only one problem. A Freedom of Information Act request made by Vice's Jason Leopold months later revealed the Baltimore Police Department's credible gang threat was entirely without basis. That's referring to that article that I didn't read. But
there was I think we both were watching this story. This is like a couple years ago, or maybe, but it was talking about how, you know, there was some story. I think it was, you know, shortly after the Trayvon Martin murder, where the cops were saying how, you know, it's getting so bad that now the Bloods and the Crips were joining forces so they can kill cops. Do you remember hearing any story about that?
I think so. I remember a story about the Bloods and the Crips joining together for something.
It's funny because the reason I remember this is because Bill Burr, once again, he made a joke about this, like, oh yeah, like, you know, we got all these, you know, these black people we keep on killing. Yeah, we need to change the subject. Hey, you know, Officer O'Malley in the back there. What do you think we should do? Why don't we just say that, you know, the Bloods and the Crips are joining forces and that we need and that our cops are under threat. Yeah, let's go with that. So, cops.
And here's your head cracking, get out of jail free card for that, buddy.
All right, let's see here. Other one, pinkwashing. Pinkwashing is an increasingly popular tool used to describe the exploitation of LGBT rights to whitewash negative effects of an otherwise reactionary institution. A frequent PR tool employed by Israel, large metropolitan police departments from Fort Worth to Buffalo have joined in gay rights parades to show their progressive values. Say, speaking of Buffalo, You remember the cops that you know pushed out that old guy?
Just recently.
Yeah, just like a few days. I mean, it's all over the world. You don't watch.
Yeah, TV. I didn't know where it came from. I've seen headlines about an old guy getting pushed, but I didn't know where it happened. At.
Yeah, that was in Buffalo, New York. Crazy thing is that I think two of the cops that were implicated in that pushing thing were part of a demonstration where they were kneeling the previous day, so literally they were kneeling, you know, in solidarity with the Black Lives Matters. But literally, as soon as they're done with that, they go and start roughing up, you know, geriatrics, so to speak. These guys don't waste any time.
No. So help me. Let's think through this real quick. Is this just the fact that that police are showing solidarity with the LGBT community, that just is kind of like almost like my when I was talking about a pecking order a week or two ago.
Two Justice Warriors, who's at the top of the pecking order, and you're like, well, you know, had she been like, you know, mm-hmm, wearing a butch haircut and a
yeah, So I established, you know, the black man is not at the top
of
that pick. I just wonder if that's what this is about. Just the fact that we're supposed to think that just because they're friendly with that community, that they're
any less violent or
somehow shielded from this. That's an interesting one that I hadn't thought of.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that one either. I mean, I don't think of, okay, I'm seen with gay people marching in a gay parade. Now I'm less threatening. Somehow that's supposed to make me a credible person. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, but maybe it's not so much as pinkwashing. Maybe it's being part of any progressive type parade / organization. Just a cop being there is given credit that he is, you know, not necessarily due. Like, for example, cops marching in the Black Lives Matter parade. Like, mm-hmm. What do you think about that? If you had a parade or like a march protesting police brutality, how do you feel about cops joining your parade?
Yeah, that's a strange one, isn't it?
Oh yeah, but I mean, it's happening more and more. I mean,
it is. Yeah, you always see it.
It's like you know, it's quite literally as if the cop is going and saying, "Let me just defang this thing." It's literally open the mouth and take the teeth right out. You can't have a protest when the cops are participating. Yeah. That's against the rules.
Yeah. I know we're taking turns, but this next one is I know that it is your number one favorite bugaboo. And so I'm gonna let you take number five as well.
Anonymously smearing police shooting victims.
Yeah, you love to point this out.
What phrase do I use again?
Looking for like dirt under the fingernails.
Wow, very good. Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who would have ever thought that when I speak, people actually listen? In the wake of police shootings, cops and their media partisans are in a rush to get as much dirt on the victims as possible.
Mm-hmm.
The nominal reason for this is to provide colors, comma, nuance, and a bit of background. But the real reason, at least as in effect, is to provide police post facto justification for excessive use of force in the press. And like, you know, kind of like we said with Arbery, I mean, literally, the body wasn't even the ground before they were like, oh yeah, you know, we found that, you know, 6 years ago he may have brought a gun to school, and by the way, he was, you know, looking, he was in a building site looking around, and you know, just a bad dude. I mean,
yeah, it's
and they did the same thing with George Floyd. Was that chick,
yep,
the one that you sent me, the person who's hard to watch? What's her name? Owens.
Oh, Candace Owens. Yeah.
Yeah. That chick. That was hard to watch.
The thing is no matter what someone has done in their past, it just doesn't justify a murder. No one.
Brian, are you sure?
Pretty sure.
I mean, hey, yeah. You know, all these shades of gray. You know?
There is, and I'll be honest. Candace Owens, I think a lot of the stuff that she said, there were some things that I did like. Don't put me on the spot because it's been a while since I watched it, and she said so much. It was like a 20-minute video.
It's like 17 minutes. It's like, yeah.
But the one thing that they put it perfectly here, and it's like kind of like what I said earlier, is it's almost like a subliminal way to make you think that because they had a less than perfect background that they somehow deserved what they got.
Yeah.
And that's what this is for. And that makes me think also our last episode, I had asked you about, I said, I said one guy. It was reported that only the kid shot him three times with a shotgun. Yeah. And so it's just like the one thing that I kept seeing in the cesspool of internet comments for this story was that he attacked, meaning Ahmad attacked the guy and tried to take his gun away, and so he deserved to get shot. But I'm thinking, if you was shot, I mean, three times, I mean, just really, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
You get shot, I don't care, you get shot. If a shotgun goes off near me, I'm done. I'm done arguing.
Oh, yeah.
If a shotgun goes off and hits me in the foot, I'm done arguing. I can't envision a scenario where he needed to
be shot three times.
Blast, reload, blast, reload.
Maybe he would just, you know, sick and tired of watching his buddy get his ass kicked. And it's like, oh my goodness. Like,
I guess, man.
I just can't sit here and watch him get, you know, get beat up like this. I gotta have dinner with this guy again. He's gonna be like, hey, like, you remember when I was getting my ass kicked by that one guy we ran up on, and you just sat and watched me?
So much bullshit in there, and yeah, absolutely the anonymous smearing of victims.
But have you noticed they only do that with black people, though?
No, I haven't paid attention, to be honest.
But you'll start paying attention now.
I will. This would be worth pointing out, there's not the historical reference or comparison to be made, but you know, there are some segments of the white community that are really, really, really kind of looked down on in a really bad way. Like, I don't know. I'm just wondering if Jimmy Joe did something, you know, I'm wondering, would they dig up the fact that he has been arrested for meth possession X many number of times? I don't know. It almost is.
Well, I think that the thing that's interesting here is that in the Ahmad story,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they dug up the dirt on the guy that was dead.
Like, right.
Two shooters, two killers, you know. I guess the thing that was crazy to me is that the dirt on Ahmad Arbery hit the press before his body was cold. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was quick.
Yeah. And to my knowledge, I mean, you actually went looking for dirt on.
It's not there.
Yeah.
It is not there.
Yeah. Apparently, these guys were like, you know, fire boys or, you know,
yep.
altar boys, and so mm-hmm. I mean, I guess everybody makes mistakes, but.
Yeah. Whitewashed.
Yeah.
And that's and I did. No pun intended.
Witty, I see you. What's next on our list?
All right. The Saving Kittens story.
Oh, you gotta love that, yeah.
Yeah. Everybody loves cats. I do, anyway. Who doesn't love a heartwarming tale of saving kittens and homeless people?
I've never heard of cops saving homeless people. I've only heard of them harassing homeless people.
Yeah, find another underpass, buddy.
Exactly. Sleep under this bridge, not on my watch.
Everyone, most notably a lazy media who routinely runs stories of police doing everyday acts of kindness, some of which are curated and highlighted by the police department's public relations apparatus or friendly media. One of the more embarrassing examples of this trope was a recent New York Times Metro story about NYPD counterterrorism police helping rescue a kitten. This is the Twitter post from the New York NYT Metro desk.
Well, I mean, the taxpayers of the great city of New York, you know, they were done proud. You're tax dollars.
They specialize in counterterrorism tactics, but on Monday, the officers rescued a kitten.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm. Yeah.
That's a good one.
And so there was no other crime in the city of New York.
It was a slow day.
Yeah, apparently. Must have been a Wednesday.
Right. All right. Number seven is you. This okay. Go ahead.
The community policing myth. In the aftermath of unrest in Ferguson, there was a rush to try and show how certain police departments were making progress. In the absence of substantive change, PR-driven fantasies about community policing and outreach were peddled by police departments and a media hungry for progress. The most tone-deaf was the Washington Post's Wes Lowery, who ran a Fresno Police Department infomercial about supposed reforms they'd made. And Fresno, a community policing ethos, builds ties between officers and residents, complete with police smiling and local residents and others, progress entirely different by tone and optics. I'm not very sure where that, I must have read that incorrectly. This kind of makes me think of when I was a kid.
Hmm.
When I was a kid in St. Louis, they were really big into that whole, like, you know, improving the image of the police. And what they used to do is they would issue the police off, the cops, baseball cards. And the idea was to get kids to go up and get the cops to give them a baseball card.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, like, yeah.
It's interesting.
Interesting. They never did anything like that back home?
Well, I was thinking about that, and here's the thing, and this is a huge difference in our backgrounds. I come from a small town that we didn't have enough money to even have our own cop. So we had to borrow one from we borrowed it from our county, the county cops.
Mm-hmm.
So, there wasn't a lot of police in my little, I mean, the community is like less than 1,500 people. It's really small. And so there weren't any police around, really. Mm. But, yeah. If there was police around, it was because something really bad had happened.
Hmm.
You know, like a cat got caught in a tree or something.
Damn, cats can't say the truth.
So,
what are those cats getting away from?
And why are they all of a sudden not able to climb trees?
You climb up, I need to climb down.
Yeah, that's an interesting difference between our backgrounds. I think
no cops where you were, and
well, I mean, I literally, you know, you make jokes about coming from a one stoplight town, but I literally come from a one stoplight town.
I guess those cops weren't making their money writing tickets.
Nah, one mail, literally like one stoplight, one post office, one a little store, a grocery little store that barely kept afloat. But it's sad. Although,
is that store still open?
No.
Oh.
Nope.
That's sad.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the town is. Not relevant to this, but yeah, my poor town is it's on its deathbed. Although, if Amazon when Amazon moves into the Wilmington Air Park, there's going to be a huge resurgence.
Wait, Amazon's moving there?
Yeah, there's a Wilmington Air Park is like It's like one of the largest
private airports.
I think in the world, right? Airports, yeah, private airports in the country. It's like the only one that can handle like this. I don't know. There's just some ridiculously huge plane.
The 777 jumbo jet.
Yeah.
Wait, wasn't DHL there for a while?
Yeah. That's the thing. DHL was there, and then they basically just fucked Wilmington over, and they were there. Wilmington made Wilmington. They went through the whole process of confiscating land and building a big bypass to get, because that was the problem. There was no quick way to get to the interstate from Wilmington. And so, the city of Wilmington, I think they had to, like, you know, whatever the act is to actually confiscate land. Yeah, I think they had to go through that process and get the land, and then they build an interstate. And like when they were halfway through building it, DHL went and moved anyway. They left and went. They moved down to the Kentucky airport. And so for the longest time there was just a road that just literally just stopped.
A road to nowhere.
Yeah, it just stopped. They've since finished it, and it's a nice little bypass, but yeah, and once DHL left, man, that poor town just shriveled up and is on life support. And then that means that all the towns around Wilmington, like Highland, where I lived, and others, they really went downhill as well. So if Amazon moves in there, they're really hoping that the communities get revitalized, because that was huge. It was before DHL, it was airborne, but yeah. It really airborne.
Airborne were there.
Yeah. They really they employed not just Clinton County, but Highland County and Fayette County. It was and when they left, man, that was hard.
Game over.
Yeah. So anyway, definitely got sidetracked. Number 8. Ooh, this is a good one, I think. This is interesting. The Christmas gift surprise. One of the more nakedly shameless tactics some police departments have taken to pull. Oh, yes. I have seen stories about this. I'm sorry. One of the more nakedly shameless tactics some police departments have taken to pulling over random people who presumably think they're about to get a ticket and handing them cash or toys.
That's never happened to me.
No, but I've seen a bunch of stories about these all the time. Yeah. So it's got a screenshot of an article about holiday surprise NYPD gives out toys during traffic stops in the Bronx.
Yeah, I'd be pissed if I'm driving to work and woo, because there is nothing that makes, you know, the butt pucker more readily.
Oh my!
Looking up just, and seeing, huh?
Yeah. Go ahead. You're right.
And looking up and seeing headlights and realizing, yep, that's for me. And so, yeah. And him to come out with a gift or money, I'd be grateful I didn't get a ticket, but
be pissed because you already ruined my day.
Exactly, and possibly my underwear.
I think the last one I seen was they was pulling them over and then giving them a good driving citation or something like that. You know, I was like, my God,
pissed me off.
Yeah.
Now, you cops, you know, have nothing else better to do.
I'm not so sure about the other articles on this website, Joe, but this was I enjoyed this. This was because every one of them, I can.
Every one of you can point it. You can think of an example of.
Yeah, and now I'm going to be. I'm going to be watching.
You've seen an example.
Yep. Very good. Well, all right, Joe, I think it's time for us to close out of here. But before we go, we're not always successful, but we like to leave our millions of listeners with something interesting, something fun, something lighthearted.
Something positive, if we can manage it.
Yeah.
What was our story last time?
I think I was talking about larva butter, right?
So yeah, how bright is your future when your future involves eating bugs?
So this is from the Daily Mail, which, yeah, they are what they are. So the mystery of Skeleton Lake solved. Scientists reveal bones found around edges of Indian Lake belong to hundreds of 9th century tribesmen who died in a freak hailstorm. Scientists believe they finally solved the mystery of how the skeletons of more than 200 people came to be in a frozen lake in northern India. The skeletons, which were first discovered by a British forest guard in 1942, were initially thought to be the bodies of Japanese soldiers traveling through India as part of a World War II land invasion. But although the cold climate around the Lake Rupkund at 16,000 feet above sea level had preserved some of the hair, flesh, and leather clothes of the victims, the bodies were dated to be around 850 AD.
Wait. So these guys confused bodies from the 40s for bodies in 850 AD?
Yeah.
Really?
Which goes back to my question, how many times do experts get to be wrong before we start questioning their expertise?
Telling you, once you have the PhD after your name, I mean, you're good for life. You don't ever have to be right about anything for the rest of your life ever again.
Scientists discovered they appeared to be from two main groups. One was closely related, which seemed to be a family group, and the other of shorter local people.
Okay. The munchkin?
I guess so, or that one family that's like freakishly tall. They concluded that the family were likely to be pilgrims heading through the valley with the help of locals as guides. Okay. Theories ranging from a landslide to a mass suicide were put forward to explain the deaths, but it is only now that researchers believe they know what caused the cracks in their skulls. A 2004 expedition to the site concluded the group was killed by cricket ball-sized hailstones during a sudden storm.
A cricket ball is like the size of a small grapefruit, right?
Yeah, I think so. This they decided was the only way to explain why the skulls and shoulder bones of the dead had all been hit by rounded objects directly from above. Really? That's the only thing they could think of?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's not very creative, but okay. Yeah. As there were nowhere to shelter in the valley, the group was at the mercy of the storm. My God.
Yeah. Talk about going, dying hard. These guys,
they're bot.
It'd be like being stoned to death.
Yeah. Their bodies lay in the lake, which regularly freezes for the next 1,200 years until their wartime discovery.
There weren't any fish in that water?
I just don't know.
Yeah, apparently, 1,200 years would suggest not, because, those guys should have been fish food.
Oh, my God. I shouldn't have done this, but... Yeah. I just, there's some comments here attached to this article. One, the first comment here just says stupid. The other one here says, show me a thunderstorm at 16,000 feet, and I'll sell you an autographed Al Gore hockey stick. Thunderstorms are actually a common phenomenon in mountain areas. Warm, moist air from the south of India is forced to rise when it hits the Himalayas and meets the cold, dry air from the north. This results in frequent, intense thunderstorms. Of course, this is, you know, a comment section expert.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I give him no credit.
Yeah, everybody's a meteorologist when they, you know, when they're reading about the ancient dead hellstorm murder. But yeah, I can't, I couldn't imagine that. Like, have you ever been caught in a hellstorm?
I have not. But I mean, Jesus Christ, the size of a cricket ball. I mean, the most I've ever heard of really around here is like golf ball sized.
Yeah, and those are terrible too. Like I remember an auntie of mine had her car got damaged as a result of a hellstorm.
Yeah.
If they were pilgrims, they were failed by their God. Their God set them up.
That reminds me of a future episode I'd like to do, but we'll discuss it offline.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I got, Joe. It's been an interesting evening for sure.
For sure.
Yeah. So I say we wrap it up here and I look forward to the next one. What do you think?
I like it. We'll have to do it. See you on the
floor. All right. Take care, Joe. Talk to you later.
Take care. Bye-bye.